The Clare Byrne Show on News Talk
with Aviva Insurance.
The Taoiseach Simon Harris recently revealed that Fine Gael will be developing a blueprint for a united Ireland. He said the country has to seriously engage with the future of the island ahead of the 30th anniversary of the 1998 Good Friday Agreement. So what are the big questions that must be considered? Well, I'm joined now to discuss all of this by Adjunct Professor in Economics at Trinity College Dublin, John Fitzgerald, Director for the Centre of Peace and Conflict at UCD, Dr. Dawn Walsh, and journalist and former Editor-in-Chief of the Belfast Telegraph, Owen Brannigan. And you're all welcome to the programme. Thank you very much for coming in. John, you caused ructions last year when you said a united Ireland would simply cost too much. But it would seem from what we're hearing now this week that it hasn't deterred politicians from wanting to have the conversation. Are you surprised that it is so much on the agenda?
I'm surprised that it's so much on the agenda. But economics is only one element of it. I'm happy to talk about the economics. Mm-hmm. But Irish independence, nobody discussed the economics of Irish independence, but we went ahead with it. So, the research I've done, and if you look at, say, German unification and so on, it would be very expensive, in particular for people in this part of the island and also in the north. And people just, the economics of this have not been presented to people. And my fear is if they heard about it, certainly in the south, that you're going to face a long-term major cut in your standard of living, that people might vote no. And if people have voted yes in the north and we voted no, it'd be like four weddings and a funeral where Hugh Grant gets punched on the nose when he stands up somebody at the altar.
So what you're saying is you can consider the question but have your eyes wide open and the facts on the table when you do.
Yeah.
Okay, what do you say to that, Owen? Do you think that people know about the economics of it and are wary of it or simply don't have any knowledge of what it might mean?
I think unity and the question of a united Ireland is something which obviously has been around since partition, and the economics of it is just one aspect that hasn't actually been looked at in any great detail whatsoever. And I mean, I'm always puzzled when I hear that people talk about there's a conversation about unity going on, because the only conversations I hear tend to be in reaction to one of John's reports or, you know, the latest Ireland's future. Because it's not, if you look at the Sunday Independent poll from at the start of the month, the Irish unity actually was behind the Ukraine war as a topic that, you know, was people were concerned about, which doesn't necessarily mean that it isn't on the table. But I think people have other priorities.
But we have the growth of Sinn Féin, you know, and their aim number one is a united Ireland, Fianna Fáil and the shared Ireland unit. Then we have, now we have Fine Gael saying that they are going to form a policy on it. So it seems to be more on the agenda and more mainstream than it ever was.
No, absolutely. Like in terms of the politics of it, politicians are engaging it. And Simon Harris, it's hard not to look at the Fine Gael approach without considering that they're ticking the Sinn Féin box, they're ticking that part of the electorate. And also, it's one in the eye for Fianna Fáil, because obviously Micheál Martin will not engage in terms of an outright debate or a straightforward unity debate. He has established the Shared Island Fund, which, you know, quietly is going about its business, mm-hmm. which, like this week, it announced, you're never sure if these are new announcements or these are just repeated announcements from months or years previously, but there was an announcement about a rail project extension to Derry through Belfast of almost 200 million. Now, to coincide with the cricket match in Stormont tomorrow, there was the 3.5 million grant to the Stormont cricket grounds. They're all small gestures, they're not small gestures. That's all going on in the background. But what's interesting about the Shared Island Fund, as opposed to, you know, the talk of, you know, blueprints, etc., it's actually succeeding in getting people to engage. The Orange Order actually boycotted the Shared Island Fund at the start. They wouldn't engage. But now they do. Now, obviously, there's money on the table. They'd be foolish not to. But it's a sign of the kind of engagement that works. It's not dealing with a predetermined outcome. It's about improving people's lives, building the narrow water bridge. It's about improving society.
Slowly, getting to a point. I want to bring Dawn in on that point. So do you think that this is politics at play, or do you think that there really is an appetite to ask the question?
So I think there's no doubt that there's politics at play. You don't want to be a party leader who's left not talking about issues that other parties are talking to voters who that's their concern. That would be very unwise. So I don't think we have to maybe be too cynical. I think it's smart and reasonable for Simon Harris to do that. But I also think that if you look at work that's been done, so for example, I'm involved in a project and we asked people how much they're interested in or how important they think planning for a united Ireland is. And the majority of voters for all the parties in Ireland in the South said that they thought planning was very important. And what might be even more interesting to listeners is that voters who didn't want a united Ireland in the North, who voted for the DUP, who voted even for the TUV, also thought that planning was very important. Because the point John makes, we don't have information about what this would look like. And the cautionary tale of Brexit hangs over our heads. People need the details. They need to know what they're voting on, if this is possible. And it is possible. It's provided for in the Good Friday Agreement. And the polls very slowly are indicating that a referendum could happen in the next number of decades.
And what do you read into that information you've just given us about unionist voters who say that we need to plan? Does that mean they're accepting it as an inevitability coming down the tracks at some point?
No, I don't think so. But I think that if you think there's a chance something is going to happen, even if you don't like that outcome, you want to know exactly what it's going to mean for you. So in a united Ireland, we would have over a million people who identify as British. They're going to be thinking about how their culture and identity is going to be respected or protected. So I think a plan so they can see, well, will we have a minister? Will we have our children forced to learn the Irish language, which is very politically sensitive for them? If I want to be a guard or a civil servant, will I need to engage with that language? These are all facts that they want to know. They want to know, what will this look like, even if it's something that you don't want to happen? So we plan for our summer holidays, but you might also plan for example, a visit from in-laws who you don't like quite so much. You still want to know what it's going to look like.
And there are all sorts of questions that we have to consider that people here might be uncomfortable with, like, should Ireland be part of the Commonwealth? Should we change the flag? Do we need to change the anthem? I mean, they're headline things, but they will have to be addressed.
I mean, I would have been quite sceptical about the, I would have seen the flag and the anthem as kind of token gestures, and I would imagine that it would have been seen. But I was kind of corrected on that by a very senior unionist figure who, when I had the conversation, and I was kind of dismissive about this talk of flags and emblems or whatever, and said, yeah, but it would be a gesture. You know, I mean, like, it's not token. It would be seen as a positive. It would be seen as a step in the right direction. I mean, like, when the Queen bowed her head in the Garden of Remembrance, that was a gesture too, but it was important, and it showed a level of respect.
Do you disagree, John, that those things need to be addressed, the flag and the anthem in particular?
They need to be addressed, and frankly, I'd be happy to change the words to the national anthem. I find it out of date, those are symbols and they're important, but if it's going to mean that people are going to be much worse off for a prolonged period, then that's a problem. But one of the really big issues is, in the North, children from working class backgrounds have no chance of progressing because they fail 60% of kids at the age of 11 and they're sent to what are called grammar schools, where they don't tend to go on to university. 40% go on to grammar schools. In the Republic, the research by the SRI shows that working class kids in the Republic have a chance of ending up anywhere, whereas in the North they don't. Could the South accept the North with its educational system, where children are sentenced at the age of 11 to not go to university? I don't think that would be acceptable. But then you're faced with the issue in the North. Will they change their... And I've presented the research on the SRI research with Seamus McGuinness in, say, the West Belfast Festival. And that was the only place in working class Belfast where people accepted the educational system needed to change. I presented it in a range of fora with people from either side of the divide, middle class, total opposition to change the educational system. And for me, to bring in a substantial part of this into this country where children are not treated equally, that would be unacceptable. And so those are kind of issues that you've got to think through. It's the economy, it's how the society works. And I think that when you start thinking about that, I won't see a referendum in my lifetime.
Another part of the education system, obviously, which is you can have a small village and you could have two or three different schools, yeah. you know, a lot separated along the religious lines. Yeah. I mean, like, that's another fundamental part of the education system, which would have to be looked at if you're going to accommodate that. And also in terms of the, you know, some of the most staunch opponents of integrated education, which is the, which is held up as this, you know, almost silver bullet, are, you know, the parents of Catholic, the Catholic middle class, who, because the Catholic schools are generally perform the best. You know, and they, that, you know, so it's, you have this group who would be, who you might imagine would be the most, who stand to, or would possibly be the most supportive of unity, and they probably would look at it and they'd think twice about voting for
it. But for us here in the Republic, if you think about the investment that it would take to bring up the education system, the overrun that we have in the Department of
Health
now would be, in the Department of Education, would be in the halfpenny place, John.
Your point about the cost, actually, Peter Hain, when he was Secretary of State for Northern Ireland in 2006, speaking in Donegal, said that the North could make major savings on education by just like in small towns.
By integrating.
You have Catholic and Protestant grammar and secondary schools. None of them providing a good education. Put the four together, you'd save money and kids would have a much better opportunity. Mm-hmm. So there are things that would save money in the North and produce a better outcome. But will the North want to vote for it?
But I think we have to separate. People have emotional connections to things. So we talked about the flag, we talked about the anthem. And interestingly, there is polling on this. And we know that if we were open to changing the flag and the anthem, that would make people in the North slightly more likely to vote for United Ireland. But we know that there's a much larger negative effect on people in the South in terms of depressing their likelihood. So they might be symbols, but they're symbols that people are very attached to, in the same way as people are very attached to, for example, sending their kids to schools that they went to. So I think we have to pay attention not just to the economics, but to the emotions on identity here.
And it's a two-sided thing, because don't forget, this has to, any border poll would have to be passed both sides of the border. So what, when we hear everything is on the table, yet see the even see the table, let alone what's on the table, mm-hmm. you know, because you create something which you think would be saleable to the unionist population of the North, and then you have to sell the same thing to people in the Republic. And at this point in time, it's hard to see how you can square that circle, how you can find something which will appeal to both, when even the very talk of a flag, an emblem, or a flag or changing the anthem, when people are actually less inclined to change that now than they may have been 30 or 40 years ago. Mm-hmm.
Wasn't it Brexit, though, that really put this on the table for a lot of people who maybe mightn't have considered it at all? And I don't think before Brexit happened, anybody was saying this will happen in my lifetime. Now, I don't know if many of us would agree that it's going to happen in our lifetimes here, but people weren't even saying that before Brexit, Dawn.
Yeah, no, Brexit absolutely changed the calculus. So you can see, particularly, for example, young Protestants, you see Protestant owners of small businesses who see a possibility of rejoining the European Union and what that offered their lives become, let's say, maybe United Ireland curious. You're not going to change your national identity or your heritage, but you think, particularly if the Good Friday Agreement protects, I could still carry a British passport. Maybe there'd be protections for my identity in other ways. So we should say people are maybe reluctant to changing a flag or an emblem, but there are areas where people feel the same across the island. So people on both sides of the island would like a UK-style NHS. Mm-hmm. If a United Ireland had that health system, people on both sides would be more likely to vote for it.
John, the NHS was something you touched on, I know, when you wrote that piece last year as well.
Yeah, the NHS, the North gets more per person than anywhere else in the UK for its health system.
Funding.
And it has a much worse outcome. Like, it is the waste of money in the North that they should have a better health service than Oxford or London, but they don't. And there is a problem. For me, the priority is making Northern Ireland work and making this island work. And I think the shared island approach is the way to go. But Northern Ireland needs to reform itself. I worked in the Northern Ireland Authority for Energy Regulation for 4 years, 20 years ago. And I remember a scheme which came up and I said, this is a daft scheme, a complete waste of taxpayers' money. And people said, but it's London taxpayers' money and it's money for Northern Ireland. And it is that approach in the Northern Ireland, we saw it with the cash for ash. The North needs to reform itself. It could have a much better standard of living if they ran themselves properly.
Is that a fair representation of how spending is done in Northern Ireland, Owen?
Well, I wouldn't know enough to disagree with it, to be honest with you. When you talk about Brexit being a key point in this, in the turning point, this debate, but also bad government in Stormont has also fuels this because...
And no government for long periods of time.
And basically, this is effectively the last chance for... has been characterised as the last chance for devolution, for the current system of government to work. And that's why there's increasing calls for reform. Even Sinn Féin have now, made suggestions as how they would reform the government. But yeah, and every time there's a simple playbook where you just blame Westminster. We're not getting enough money for Westminster. No matter how much money is coming, it's just never enough. And there's no accountability for it. Mm-hmm. And this assembly is interesting in terms of Sinn Féin being the biggest party, and it's them who are getting the lion's share of the blame for things.
Just some listener response to what we've been chatting about. This listener is in favour of a united Ireland, but let's be honest, the only people benefiting will be the people in the north. The cost and risks are too high. Just look at Germany. Do you think, Dawn, that many people would share that view, that the benefits would only come to people in Northern Ireland?
I think that's possible if you're looking at this from an economic point of view. I'm not an economist, so I study peace and conflict. And I think what you can see from polls is that there is a significant majority of people on the island, on the south, when they're asked, say they're in favour of united Ireland. And I think that that is perhaps an emotional commitment, the idea that partition was forced upon the island and that people don't feel we've kind of fulfilled the national project until that is removed. So I don't think people's decisions about this are all on the basis of economics, though it is a very significant part. But I think John made the great point. Nobody did an analysis of whether Ireland was better off independent in 1916 and decided to have a rising on that basis. So people's emotions drive a lot of this. And I think sometimes as researchers or politicians, we want people to park that. But that's an essential part of our humanity and who we are. We're not AI models.
Mm-hmm. Well, we have a very strong Republican minded person who has been in touch with us this morning, who would love to see united Ireland and open to change on key symbols. However, if this put me and my family into a more impoverished state, no thanks. I think that would be to the forefront of people's minds, yeah, particularly in the Republic of Ireland, because we've come so far.
I can give an example of a small snapshot. I don't know if John or Dawn were there in the National Concert Hall when Fintan O'Toole and Sam McBride mm-hmm. did their For and Against the United Ireland. And they did a poll at the beginning of the night saying, and the number against, I can't remember the exact figure, but by the end of it, when both Sam and Fintan had presented, that number had grown as soon as the issue started.
Against
the United Ireland. Now, it was much lower than I think it was in the teens. It was something like 13 to 19 it grew. But it did grow as soon as people started engaging with it and thinking, all right, okay, so the health service, okay, how do we do that? Policing, etc., housing.
But that's not unusual. So when it comes to any referendum, people are status quo orientated. So you always see a move back to the status quo. So we saw it in the Scottish independence referendum. So we could really expect that if there was a campaign, that we would actually expect to see the numbers in the south for United Ireland go down when people start to talk about whether it be economics, health or education. But that doesn't mean that we shouldn't have these conversations and provide people with facts.
And absolutely. The starting point of this is, the idea that you should be planning for a border poll. And I mean, if you plan for worst case scenarios, you plan for crisis. And I mean, this, with the prospect of a Nigel Farage premiership, which is the other outworking of Brexit. Mm-hmm. And I mean, he's the wild card in this. I mean, there could be, where they have shown since the Brexit vote, they have no attachment and no, you know, to Northern Ireland as part of the UK. And it's probably expendable for them. It's one less problem for them to worry about.
All right. Well, listen, we'll leave it there. But it's been fascinating. Thank you so much, all three of you, for coming in. That's Dawn Walsh, Owen Brannigan and John Fitzgerald. Back after this break.
The Clare Byrne Show
with Aviva Insurance.
Weekday mornings at 9 on News Talk. Conversation that counts.